Get in the know. Non-stop Vikings talk. It's Purple Daily on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
Dude, the Rhino might be back, bro.
Football.
Why, hello there. And welcome to another episode of Trenches with Boone on Purple Daily, a 10 plus years in the trenches in the National Football League.
Football.
And he brings his expertise to answer my dumb questions.
Let's go.
Every single week. What is happening? How do you feel about early morning football as a viewer? Do you enjoy these London games? Like, Vike, you have to wake up, put a pot of coffee on, and just inject some football in your veins at whatever time in the morning?
It's so fun. You wake up right away and you're like, football's on. It's like Christmas because football. It's into like football night. But then it sucks because you have four kids that are all on the ice and you have to do dibs and you don't get to watch any of it. So it's like,
oh my gosh.
I know, right?
Like, life decisions, man.
I know. It's okay. It'll pay off. It's all good.
So we're gonna do a few things on this episode here. And by the way, I should mention for the audience that we're holding two live vent line events at Surly Brewing Company. The first one is October 16th, noon kickoff, Dolphins, with a watch party and then live vent line. And then November 6th, I believe that's the Commanders game. Old Kirky boy going back to his old stomping grounds. So come hang out at Surly Brewing Company October 16th and November 6th with the Purple Daily crew and some vent line after. But you've been wanting to do some film breakdowns on this show for a long time.
I love film. I love it.
And there's just a bunch of logistical things we've been trying to figure out. Mm-hmm. So largely for the YouTube audience, toward the end of this episode, we're going to unleash Alex, and he's going to look at a fun play back from week one and then an interesting play from this last Sunday in London.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We're going to unleash you is what's going to happen.
I don't know if you're ready. I don't know if I'm ready. I'm afraid I'm going to say something really bad, though.
Are you rusty? Like, how much film do you crunch now that you're not an active player? Do you still wake up on a Wednesday?
Oh, yeah. All the time. Well, because I have to watch Cordell's film. So I watch him. Like, this last week, I watched him play the Jets. And then I have to watch all these other guys because we have to watch, you know, I have a couple guys in the league right now. And then not only that, but we have to watch the Vikings. And then I still have to watch the Browns and all that kind of stuff. It's. Got to keep up on it, dude. Can't fall behind.
I want you to teach me, a non-football player, how to watch film like a pro. Like, when I watch film, and I say watch film, it's very loosely. Like, I'll see a clip on Twitter or something, and I'll watch it for 10 seconds. And I don't even know half the things. It's like, whenever you and I kind of just dip into, you notice things right off the bat because you've been doing it professionally for so long that most common fans don't. And I think that'll be the fun thing about looking at some of these plays. So we'll do that toward the end of...
Nervous. I really am nervous.
don't let us down, Booney.
I get so into it sometimes. I get real close to the screen. People laugh at me.
Just breathing in the football.
I start breathing real hard. I start thinking real fast. And then all of a sudden I start shambling over my words. It's a freaking mess, man.
So, all right, let's start as we usually do. I'm going to give you my general take on the state of the Vikings. And you tell me if I'm an idiot here. So... I feel like I kind of put the last two games in a similar bin, the Lions game from 2 weeks ago and the Saints game from this last Sunday. And there's so many things to nitpick. Mm-hmm. Yes, there's defensive things that are leaky and there's some penalties crept into it for the first time this week. There's a ton of drops. The Vikings are like top 10 in most drops, receivers and tight ends. And so they're like, I have a list of 8 or 10 things we could just go in and nitpick. But I thought the outcome of that game was perfect because it shows people and it shows the Vikings very few football games and wins are going to be clean slate, perfect victories. It's going to be, you're going to fall behind in games. You're going to have dumb penalties. You're going to have guys drop passes. You're going to blow a lead or fall behind or whatever it is. Your kicker is going to miss an extra point that opens the door for them to kick a field goal. Like, these things happen all the time. The Bills were down by 17, came back and won, right? The best teams in the NFL find a way to win regardless. Or as I put it on the Ventline episode on Sunday, win anyways. I don't care. Like, but how are they? But so-and-so dropped a pass. What do you mean? What are you supposed to do in the kicker? I don't care. The best teams figure it out. The best teams figure it out in the end, even if it was ugly for 2.5 hours. And that's what I love. This team is banking wins by just coming alive late while they learn a new offensive and defensive system. They've banked a 3-1 record learning a new system because they've been able to just sort of sift through the murkiness and find a way in the end. So that's I'm kind of positive Phil here after these last couple wins.
I know, right?
I'm kind of loving the way they're pulling these games out, and it's becoming part of their DNA. I don't know. What do you think?
I felt like you were kidding at first, and you're trying to talk me into it. But no, I agree with you, and I think this is the last time I'm going to say that this year. That was a sloppy game, and it was. I agree with you. It goes in the same box as the Lions game. There are some things you can nitpick. I will say this first and foremost: a win is a win. Like, it's really hard to do in the league. It's really hard to do when you go to London on Thursday. And then not only that, but you come back here knowing you have to play another game. Like, I'm going to be honest, kind of falling into a really good spot. Like, this is one of those things, like, you go to London, anything could really happen. Their team, yeah, they're decimated. But at the same time, you're in London. Like, it's just a whole nother experience, and you can't explain it, because when you're over there, you know you're not in America. And you're like, man, what are we doing? We're in a soccer stadium. Nobody here even knows who the hell we are. They probably gave them all this gear. This is all fake. What is like? What am I doing here?
The random jerseys are hilarious, right? You scan the crowd. There was a lot of Vikings fans, but you scan the crowd, and it's like just like Houston Texans jersey. Like, you're not wearing that willingly.
That someone gave jersey. What the hell is going? Like, you know, somebody just went to a Goodwill and started throwing stuff around.
Is that a John Kitna jersey? What the hell?
Dan Orlovsky, isn't that the guy that jumped out of the end zone? No, but you go over there and you do that. I'm gonna be honest. It was sloppy. Like, the third down conversions were driving me nuts. There was a pass in the game to Munt that he drops that just drove me super nuts, because simple plays. There was the intentional grounding. I didn't really agree with it. I was kind of like, man, you know, that could always be a 50-50. And I thought it was funny how Kevin was kind of pointing at the ref, like, you know, you're lying. Like, I just find him comical at times.
He's like if you're going to call that, and I don't know what they cut away. After
right.
That,
like, you want to know pissed. What he says, but I don't agree with that. But you get behind and then you get called for false start. Like, it's you're shooting yourself in the foot because you're getting sloppy. And there needs to be somebody that grabs the reins and kind of pulls everybody back. Like, hey, let's do this. And at times I feel like it's Dalvin. He's the guy that, like, when things are moving really slow or they look like they're going through the motions and he gets 2 yards, like, I kind of want to smack him in the back of the head and be like, dude, if you just run through someone's face, this team will pick up. Because you see it, like, later in the game. Number one, let's all thank special teams, because they were the spark the entire day. First of all, you get a fumble recovery. That's huge. The offense goes down, pisses down their leg again, right, being stupid. And then all of a sudden they come back out again. They throw this pass, which was way underthrown, but good for that punter. Like, to have the balls to just be cool enough to throw it, you got to be so nervous. Like, it's my one opportunity. I can't mess it up. You underthrew
his heart,
it. Like,
his heart's just pounding sure. through his neck.
What if you just saw him like, oh, God.
We should definitely have a heart monitor tracker for punters right that. Before the fake punt snap. Oh, my God. 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 Oh, my God.
No, mic them up. I want to mic them up. I want to hear what they say. They're probably freaking out. But that was the big spark in the day that I thought brought the offense back. But as soon as – and I can't remember which one it was. It was either the fumble recovery or the pass. Dalvin went around the right corner, and he looked like the old Dalvin. And all of a sudden, it's kind of like the offense is back again, and then all of a sudden they start sputtering out of control again. Or they let Kirk get sacked, or, you know, the letting the mic run through the A-gap. Your number one no-no in the history of the NFL. Nobody is allowed to come through these two gaps. Don't care who it is. Can't ever let it happen. When you let the mic do that, and then all of a sudden, Kirk's kind of spazzing out a little bit. He's starting to fall back into his old Kirk ways. And you're like, dude, just the interior of this offensive line needs to figure it out and pick it up. Like, this, you can't be saying this every week. Not every week can be like, hey, we gutted it out. That's great. You know what you're going to get in the playoffs? Nothing. You're not going to go anywhere. And it's great to win a bunch of games, but it's even greater to go out and win the big games and win them the right way and not go out there and get called for false starts twice in a row and then go out and look like you're just kind of walking through the motions for these two-yard gains when you know you can go downhill and hit somebody. Like, it's just – there are times where I see Dalvin go exploding through that corner, and I'm like, man, that is the old Dalvin. And then there's times where it looks like he's just kind of – weaving his way through the A gap, and it's like, man, maybe if somebody up front would just smash somebody, he could find something or he could turn it on, and this could be the whole game. It doesn't have to be like little bits here and there sporadically.
Yeah, he's it's interesting because we're a month into the season, And, you know, every year he has all these, he's, you know, all, it feels like he's always chunking, you know, explosive plays or 15, right. 20, 25 yard gains. You know, every year of his career, his long run is always like 70 or 80 yard touchdown runs. And through four games, his long run of the season is 16 yards. So he has yet to break a 20 yard run. And I guess my question to you is how much of that is just the guys up front aren't doing a good enough job?
Oh, yeah.
Or maybe it's a combination of both. Or is he just not the same dude he was maybe two or three years ago?
I'm not going to say that. It's too early to say that. What I am going to say is when you look at some of those plays up front, a lot of it, and I'm not going to name names, is the interior. Not finding the mic. Not finding the proper linebacker. Like, people are turning too much. They think that Delvin's like running a 38 toss sweep of like 1956 where the running back's running to the sidelines and they're all on this like elephants on parade. And he ends up trying to cut it up the A gap and the mic's just standing right there. If you don't block DeMario Davis, he's gonna hit someone. That's what he does. And they all just keep turning and like that should be your number one no-no as an offensive lineman. It's like the same thing as a DB. You never turn your back to the quarterback. Why? Because you can't see what he's doing. I would never turn and not look at somebody that I was coming for. Like, I can never solely go hit this one guy to maybe come back and hit this guy. I have to see this guy because if he goes back, I have to go back. That's what the running back sees. If the running back sees the linebacker come back, he's thinking, I'm going to go front side. Now, if I just aimlessly go front side and nobody gets the linebacker, what's going to happen? Nothing good. And that's why I say at times it looks like they're just going through the motions. If you're not IDing it properly and you're not blocking people properly, you can't expect to get more than 2 yards. And that's because Delvin is literally falling forward every time. Like, okay, I'm just going to churn this and fall forward. But then all of a sudden, this random play that we get everybody blocked, Delvin hits the corner like a bat out of hell. And all of a sudden, it's 15 yards later. And you're like, why can't we do this every time? It's that simple. We don't have to throw it 40 times a game. We don't have to take all these sacks. Let's hand it off a little bit more. Let's block who we're supposed to block, and let's run the ball and smash people up.
So I asked you, I think it was after the Eagles game, where it was like, oh, okay, the offense clearly hasn't clicked yet. They didn't play in the preseason. It's a new system. I said, how many weeks realistically until this thing should start to look the way it's supposed to look and click? And you said, for sure, 4 or 5 weeks. And then after 4 or 5 weeks, if it still looks weird and clunky, then you can start asking some questions. So it's been 4 weeks, and I think we've seen it peak a few times here and there. You see what it's capable of. You saw, I mean, Justin Jefferson scored on a jet sweep motion. I think it was classified as a running touchdown, right?
Yeah.
And there's been some other great peaks. I mean, hell, they actually, speaking of JJ, there was a route, and Kevin O'Connell diagrammed this on Vikings.com this week too. I think it was with Pete Bursich. And it was Jefferson just straight down the left sideline. Boom, Kirk, just a not even.
Was that the one against Marshawn Lattimore?
I believe so. Yeah, on the left side.
Such a sweet pass.
And so you're seeing some stuff here, but you're also seeing them just sputter out. There's some confusion. There's guys running the wrong routes. So whether it's the running game or the passing game, how much of the clunkiness is still just new system, trying to figure this thing out? No one played in the preseason, et cetera.
Yeah, I'm done with that. After this game, I'm done. There can't be any more of it. You went to London. I get it. That's a tough game. You go out on Thursday. That's even tougher. You're coming back to play another game. But by now, you should be dialed in. There shouldn't be any more, you know, mishaps. There shouldn't be any more MEs, MAs, things like that. You can't just let the mic not get blocked. You can't let the mic run through the A-gap and destroy your quarterback. Like, these are simple things that you can't let happen. You can't let Delvin just simply walk up to the A-gap and fall forward. You got to go up there and create things at times. You have to be a spark for certain people. And when Delvin gets going, it's fun because everyone seems to get excited around him. When JJ gets going, the whole team gets going. But at times, you can't always just throw to the same guy. Like, you know, everyone's talking about the Lions game. Oh, my God, he didn't do anything. You know, what are you going to – well, he's not going to do everything every game. Eventually, a team's going to go, listen, if it takes 12 guys to keep him out of the end zone, we don't care. We just can't let this one guy beat us. Why? Because we're going to look stupid on Monday when everyone's like, hey, you knew that's Justin Jefferson, right? Oh, okay. We didn't know if you're stupid or not. Apparently you are.
It's kind of what the Lions did. The Lions were like, well, we're just going to put three dudes on him. Most important drive of the game. KJ Osborne breaks open a couple times.
Right. You know? And that's when you put the offense more in a bind because you're basically saying to them, listen, we're willing to risk these one-on-ones with these players that might be good. Like, yeah, Thielen's a great player, but KJ Osborne and Irv Smith, you know, we'll take our one-on-ones with them because they need to prove it to us. If we lose a game because Irv Smith Jr. caught a touchdown for 80 yards, hey, man, we can all turn around and go, at least it wasn't that guy, right? Hey, we're cool with that. And you, people laugh and they think I'm kidding, but I'm like, no, really, it's that simple. Like, just don't let the one guy that's killing everybody kill you. And then the rest of the game should be competitive, right? Like, you're going to make these guys who don't really get the ball a lot chances when it's one-on-ones. Hey, it's your time to shine. What do you do? And the defense will roll that dice better than anything. Now, last week, and I don't know why I feel like this because I want to say this openly. I'm a fan of Marshawn Lattimore, and I think it's because every time somebody throws a punch at him, he throws one back. Like, he never backs down from a fight. And I can respect that as a player, but to see him get just manhandled at times by JJ, I mean, like, there was times where he was so off that he was like, God, I just can't get beat deep. And then all of a sudden, a 15-yarder out. And it just made it look simple and things like that. And I'm also a little irked that Justin Jefferson only got a touchdown on a run. I don't know why, because I feel like I want that to go against Marshawn Lattimore as much as I like him. I still want it to be like, oh, you still gave one up. You know, they got you. Yeah.
Swing that was that. We're gonna look at a play from week one too that was was kind of a similar concept toward the end of the episode, and it wound up being a passing touchdown just so the way that they ran it. Another thing, I had never heard this term until Kevin O'Connell stepped up to his introductory press conference back in January when he brought this up. But apparently, and you tell me if I'm just, is this a thing? Is the middle eight a thing that gets talked about in the NFL?
The middle eight? No.
So that this might just be Bill Belichick apparently coined this concept, the middle eight, and Kevin O'Connell spent a year there in New England as a backup quarterback in 2008. And it's about dominating, and if you're keeping score of the final 4 minutes of the first half and the first 4 minutes of the second half. And this is why the Vikings oftentimes when they win the coin toss will look to get the ball offensively to start the second half.
Yeah.
Because what they're looking to do, as Kevin O'Connell has explained it through Bill Belichick's teachings, you want to score at the end of the first half so that you have momentum and come back and score again. And all the while keeping the opposing team's offense off the field for like 45 minutes of real time through halftime, 2 minute warnings, and all the timeouts and stuff. And so by the time, so now they've got maybe taken a couple punches as a team, and their offense has just been standing around for like 45 minutes of real time.
Right. It's like the momentum thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
You want to take that momentum from the first half right into the second.
And there was the Action Network did a study on, they just picked like 1 week from a couple years ago, I think 2020, and they looked at all 16 games, and they just looked at the, not the total score, but only the score in the middle eight. So maybe, you know, one team had a 7-3 advantage in the middle eight or whatever. And it was like, of the 16 games, 13, the team that won the middle eight won 13 of the 16 games or something. So this is a thing that Kevin O'Connell subscribes to. This season, in their three wins, the Vikings have a 23-0 lead in the middle eight, end of the first half and beginning of the second half.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on this concept?
Oh, that's a huge concept. That's one of the things that, I mean, I've never heard it called the middle eight, but that's why a lot of teams defer, is because they want to, you know, I forget what they used to say, not double dip. But
it's like a 2-1 kind of a thing.
Yeah, two for one. Like, they used to have a phrase for it, though, and they would say it all the time. And they'd be like, the biggest thing we can do is take this momentum from 2 minutes into the halftime and then come back out and score again. And there were times where you would deflate a team by doing that. And you'll see teams, if some teams are not good, but there are good teams that have that done to them, and you just see them crumble. And it is hard. It's devastating because – I've said this before, there's nothing harder than watching another team's offense just continuously get first down after first down after first down. And you're like, let's go crazy over here. I can do this myself. You know, it's demoralizing. And then you go out there, their defense is just going nuts because they know what's going on. And you're like, all right, here we go. They're pinning their ears back. It's about to be a day, boys.
Yeah. I think, too, like the idea of, you think about, okay, it's a 12-minute halftime, I think, in the NFL. I think it's timed at 12 minutes, 12 or 15 or whatever. Right. Yeah. And then you got the 2-minute warning, which is a 2-minute commercial break usually at the end of the first half. So that's like just halftime and the 2-minute warning are, let's call it, just 15 minutes of real time. plus all of the stoppages, you know, timeouts being used and all this stuff. And I don't know. You probably do get antsy. You probably, like you said, you're watching the other team move the ball around, and then they get it back to start the second half, and maybe there's a 10-point swing or something in there.
That's bad.
I think what I love is that the head coach is thinking about things like this. I love that he's like,
we should be
obsessing about things like this.
You should be. This isn't the first time I've heard this. There were tons of coaches that obsessed about stuff like this. Like, this was, there were some coaches that were like, this is the perfect scenario. We come out 2 minute, drive the ball down right down their throat, score, get the ball back in half, score again, game over. Mm-hmm. They would preach it all the time, and it's so hard to do that. I mean, number one, just the placement of the ball, and to see how, you know, you would have to get really lucky. But not only that, you go down and score by halftime, you know they're getting ripped open. So if they don't come out and give you their best shot by the second half, you're kind of like, yeah, that is game over.
Yeah. Another interesting thing, I'm pretty sure, I'm trying to see how many they took here, but
do it.
The Vikings coming into this game had not taken a false start. They took 3 false starts, I believe, in that game against the Saints.
One of them was questionable. I'm going to be honest. It was questionable. I don't want to throw that flag.
So we'll call it 2.5. That's fair. 2.5 false starts. Mm-hmm. They also came in. Is this accurate? Yeah. They came in with 1 false start and no offensive holdings. They committed 2 false starts in the game against the Saints. They're one of 2 teams, and the Commanders are the other one, that hasn't committed an offensive holding penalty through the first 4 games. Last year, the Vikings had, it was like the second most combined false start and holding penalties in the league. They were just an undisciplined. Now, Ole Udo had like 11 of them at right guard.
Right, not fair.
Holy Udo. That's interesting to me. The Rams, by the way, with Sean McVay and Kevin O'Connell last year, had the fewest false starts and holding penalties. What do you make of that? Is it a coaching thing that teams just don't jump or don't hold? What is that?
Yeah, I think that's a lot of discipline. Coaches teaching the right thing, obviously. Comes from a great system with Sean McVay. They were, you know, Sean got on his players. But I think a lot of that is leadership too in the locker room. You know, like the quarterback keeping everybody in line, the offensive line keeping everybody in line. Because as much as people say there are a lot of fights, there aren't really a lot of fights. Like, you're not going to really yell at everybody on game day when something goes wrong. So when something goes wrong, there has to be one guy that's like, hey, come on, enough, right? And they don't really yell at anyone. They're just kind of like, hey, I'm the bar setter. And this is not where we're setting the bar. People are like, got it, totally done. So I think there's just a good leadership. And I think it's another thing too, like, when you run this offense and you kind of break it down, they don't really go crazy exotic snap counts. Like, there were times where you see some snap counts that are just ridiculous, right? Like, guys are going nuts. Daytona, Saturn, what that's fun, you know? And you're like, dude, home Atlanta. They don't really do that kind of stuff. Kirk's very vanilla. Here we go, Blue Wave.
Well, his voice cracks if he gets a little too aggressive with the snap counts. So he's got to be careful.
Dude, and the best is, you know, when it cracks, the offensive line starts dying laughing. You just can't help yourself. You're in just such this rage, and all of a sudden it sounds like a 12-year-old kid just said something, and you're like, and then the defense starts laughing, and you're like, this play doesn't count.
He's hilarious to me, man. Like, people call me a Kirk hater.
You are.
He's just he's an easy punching bag for things. Maybe I'm just being a bully. I don't know. But his voice cracks. He's got the clenched teeth going on. He's such a dad. Did you see the video? I think it was, they were on like a team bus or team plane coming back from London. And I'm probably butchering this story, and the audience can tell it. He had a teammate's like spinner diamond necklace on, and he's just giggling, wearing this big like Justin Jefferson necklace. Oh man, I think they're like, I feel like the team is leaning into Kirk more. I feel like they're letting Kirk be Kirk. He's bringing him back in the fourth quarter. Kevin O'Connell is embracing him and, you know, going to bat for him at press conferences and stuff. It's like, I think this is the most comfortable Kirk has probably ever been. In his career to this point.
In the Vikings?
Yeah.
Without a doubt. In his career, I don't know. But I would say here, this seems like he's the most comfortable. And even at times, he does look a little spastic. He is getting hit at times. But for sure, this is the most, I don't even know what the word would be. Like, his guard is down right now the most. You know what I'm saying? Like, he just seems like he's free back there. He's comfortable. He's kind of doing some things. He has to do a little shimmy at times, but he still makes it happen, like you said. And you are a Kirk hater for sure.
Yeah, I probably am.
Not for sure.
I don't think it's that simple. I'm a Kirk critiquer. A Kirk critiquer.
Win a real big game, and then we won't be haters. How about that?
That's the thing. And if actually, if you look at his last season and a half, there's a lot of fourth quarter comebacks, a lot of you know, nice drives in the last 4 to 6 minutes. He's getting more comfortable in those situations. And like we said at the top of the show, I mean, I don't really care if the game was ugly or if you threw an interception or whatever. Like, none of that matters. If the game is close and it's there, go win anyways.
Right.
And I'm not going to say he's turning into Tom Brady late in games or anything, but he has been able to flush stuff more often. The Eagles game, he was unable to flush some of that. And he just kept playing poorly. But if Kirk can even just flush a few more things, they're going to keep winning some of these games. But ultimately, like you said, if you're facing a winning team on the road, like, those are the games those are the types of games you're going to hit in the playoffs. You're not always going to get the Lions ever in the playoffs.
Or the Saints without a starting quarterback, starting receiver, starting running back. Like, that's just not going to happen. And sometimes people get mad at me because I am very harsh, and I'm like, that's great that they're winning, and I think it's cool. But eventually, what are they going to do when they see a real team? Like, Patrick Mahomes is on the other side. What are you doing now? Because that game's going to come down the pipe, and that's when it's going to matter the most. And it's super fun to be excited right now, and that's why I have no issues with the way they're winning. It's, hey, we're winning. Got it. Now we stop winning sloppy. We have to start cleaning things up. And if you do, just imagine how much better it's going to be. Like, the red zone. The red zone's got to pick up. That's one of the things I think bothers me the most, is because when we always had poor red zone offenses, it just led to bad years. Because if you can't do anything down there, teams will eventually just start stuffing you and stuffing you. And these field goals, they nothing pisses me off more when you have to settle for a field goal. Like, as an offensive line, you feel like you failed the most because you're like, we're so close. I could spit on the goal line right now, and we couldn't get there. How the hell did this happen? And then you kick a field goal, and you're pissed off. You're frustrated. The red zone's got to pick up for sure. Third down has to pick up, and the silly penalties have to pick up. But these are all things that are, like, super fixable. You know what I'm saying? One of the red zones was all the penalties. Like, sometimes they kind of intermingle each other, and it's like, listen, if you guys just stop with these three main areas, this score looks way different.
The third down thing has been a thing, not to be a Kirk hater here, but it's been a thing in his whole career on every offense except for him. I'm not going to put it all on him.
No,
but if you look at some of the quarterbacks that are generally great on third down, mobility helps. Just being able to they know you're going to – it's third and eight. They know you're going to pass. They're probably going to get pressure. Can you keep a play alive? So mobility helps. He doesn't have it. And then just having the huge arm, like, just being able to Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers even, just get weird with your arm angle because it's off script or something.
Yeah.
And, he is so great on script, and third down is oftentimes not on script because something happens or there's pressure. And so I do think that's part of it.
But that's why I fall back on the coaches. Like, if pressure is your problem, then that's a coaching problem. If pressure is in your face, number one, fix the problem. Okay, we need to fix the way we're sliding our offensive line. We need to fix who we're in there blocking as running backs. And two, where the hell is my hot route? You can't just keep saying, hey, this is going to keep being Kirk's issue. Like, eventually somebody has to go, okay, here's the real issue. We're giving up too much pressure on third down, or we don't have enough hot routes on third down. Kirk doesn't like the routes on third. Like, I can't remember what game it was. It was this year. Maybe it was the Green Bay game. There was one third down, and I remember I think I sent you the picture of it, where the cornerbacks, it was like third and 10. The cornerbacks were like 12 yards off, and everybody was just up in the A-gaps. Maybe it was the Lions game. But you're looking at that and you're like, there's a simple solution, but nobody's looking at it. Everyone's just in the moment like, you know what the play is called? We just got to run it. Instead of someone going, hey, look at all this free grass right here in the middle. Why don't we give it to the fastest guy on the team right now? Just throw it to him right now. Give it to him. See what he does. Yeah. I would trust that guy's going to make a move. I let my fifth graders do it. I'm like, hey, listen, if you got free grass to go, kid, you throw that smoke. And they do. They're smart enough to do it because they're like, I trust my teammate will make a play over this other kid tackling him short of the first down.
I love that you have your fifth graders running an NFL playbook. But you told me before we jumped on the mics that you have a quarterback, a fifth grade quarterback that can throw like 30-yard fade routes on the.
It was ridiculous today. It was ridiculous today. We also ran. I told you the dive option. I was so proud of them. This kid, he ran the perfect dive, and you could just see everybody close in on our fullback, and he ran up to this Sam linebacker, and he pitched the ball so clean. He actually did a no look. He looked away, and the kid didn't know what to do. And then the running back just took the corner, and one of the dads looked at me and was like, "Was that a dive option?" You're damn right it was. I told him we're going old school today.
No look behind the back. Flip
it. I told him, though, you ever no look that again, you will no look yourself to the bench. I'm going to tell you right now, because no, you are not Patrick Mahomes. Those things don't happen out here on this high school field. No, sir.
We need to get the all 20. Do you have like a tower for all 22 capturing the footage of practices and games? No.
Everyone thinks I'm crazy because I'm like the only coach that doesn't film. Like, you don't film your kids? I'm like, no, they're 10. That's weird.
Film their 10-year-olds? Like,
yeah. That's weird to me. I mean, I can remember every play from the game, so I'm just kind of like, here's what we need to work on. We go back, we get better, but we try to install new things every week. Like the NFL, we have to keep putting things in because people are eventually going to catch on to you. So then you go, hey, listen, off of this smoke, we're going to do a fake smoke fade, or off of this pitch, we're going to do a pitch double pass. You know what I'm saying? Like, you just keep everybody guessing, and the kids, they love it. Oh my God, they're so cool.
Do you ever overwhelm kids, though? Is it just sort of like football natural selection? If you're overwhelmed, sorry, kid, it's just fifth grade football is not for you. You're off.
No, I have to break it down very differently to a lot of kids. There's some kids that I can talk very openly with that they'll come talk to me openly, and I'll be like, that's how it's going to be, huh? Well, okay, cool. Sure. Let's talk like that then. I mean, they just obviously want a friend to talk to, or they'll, you know, tell me about school and stuff. But there are some kids where I have to be way less because they're just not ready. And that's fine. We break it down to however you need it. Now, there are some people that get upset with me because they think that I try to run the score up, but I'm not. Like, and this is kind of one of my biggest issues with coaching is that, like, people are so – like, when I was playing – grade school, I don't remember people being soft on us. I don't remember people being like, hey, you know what, we're winning, we're gonna give it up. Like, I remember they were like, we're winning, now we're really gonna win. I was like, you learn lessons that way. You learn like, hey, you know what, I'm not gonna come out here and mess around anymore. I don't want to be this guy getting my ass kicked every week. I'd rather come out here and be that guy doing that. So there's
like, every fifth grader needs a 62-0 ass kicking just to set their expectations right for the rest of their lives.
But then again, too, like, it's
hard. Onside kick it.
I see some of these teams, like, it's like goes back to the college thing. Like, someone will be like 77-10. At what point is enough enough? But you're like, hey, if you give the kid the ball and he's going to score, what do you tell him? Do you tell him, hey, buddy, today's not your day? No. You just let him do what he does. And if he scores, you go, hey, man, that was a great job. Great run. Let's go. Back to defense. Like, it just – I don't know. I guess coaching has changed, and sometimes I don't agree with it.
You know, baseball is the worst. I used to cover baseball as a beat writer, so I was always like in the clubhouses and stuff after every game.
So
like
fun.
The things that baseball players complain about, and football does this sometimes where, you know, why'd you throw a pass, you know, with 4 minutes to go? It's like, I don't know, my backup quarterback needs work and whatever. Your backs
are so mad.
But like baseball, it's like if a guy has a no-hitter after six innings, then you can't bunt anymore. Or, you know, be a man and swing the bat. Well, if we can't hit your slider, maybe I'll try and drop up. Just relax. Or right. I'm going to throw this rock at your head because I'm offended that you took too much time getting out of the batter's box.
It drives me nuts.
Showing me up like that. Dude, get over it.
It makes sense, though, why sports has become the way it's become. And it's become all these parents that just jump into it and like complain so much. And you're like, listen. At some point, we're all going to get beat out here, okay? And that's a lesson that we're all going to have to learn. Here's what we did wrong. Let's go out and fix it. We'll be better. We'll come back better. But everyone instead just wants to complain. It's kind of annoying. Like, you see it everywhere, dude. Like, even these college coaches, sometimes, like, they'll throw flags and they go nuts. The NFL coaches, how about Bill Belichick going crazy? How funny was that? I was dying. It's been years since I've seen him go nuts. But I was like, you know what, dude? You've earned the right to throw a headset at a referee. Good for you.
That also felt like 3 years of pent-up frustration, too. That
maybe 10.
Yeah.
Tom,
yeah,
he's not coming back.
No.
Dude, he threw
it. Take it out on this Lions official, this Lions judge.
I think when he threw it, though, he instantly regretted it because you could see him kind of look down like, oh, my God, how am I going to talk to everybody?
Yeah.
It's kind of like, this goes back to the old saying, the coaches always be like, why when you get into a fight, you always punch a guy in the helmet? Because you're like, what's your first reaction when you get into a fight? Punch a guy in the face. Well, you're not really thinking, oh, he's got a helmet on. But like, the coaches do the same thing. They slam their headsets down, and it's like, you do the same thing, because then they go, God, give me a new one. God, what's that? Like, dude, you're an idiot too. We're all idiots.
Yeah, they need some sort of like dummy electronic gear hanging in their belt pocket, right? So they can pick that up. It's like a squeeze sacrificial headset or something. Yeah. You want to fire some people's asses here?
Dude, I think, okay. And I was thinking about this today. Last week I told you that Tua had that concussion in the game. Remember when we were talking about that? And I was like, by the way, he definitely had something going on. Well, then he comes back this week. So you think I already know who I'm going to fire. Like, gone, dude. Like, I think everybody there needs to go after that. And I was
the neutral medical doctor guy got fired.
Everybody needs to go. Because here's what I was thinking about today. Because at first I was kind of like, well, who's really to blame here? Because it's a tricky situation. Because as a player, you don't ever want to be the guy that's like, no, I can't go, right? Like, you want to be the guy that's like, I'm a warrior. I can do this. Sometimes when it comes to the brain, you're like, am I over exaggerating? Am I being for real? Now, obviously, he got up and stumbled like 12 times. He should not have gone back in that game.
Yeah.
We all know that now, right? Like, I just, for the record, you can tell when a guy has a concussion as opposed to when his back hurts. When his back hurts, he'll just like hold his back and be like, oh my God. When he stands up and falls over 6 times, yeah, no, dude, you're completely out of it. I'm not sure that the old line were thinking straight when they were like, no, dude, you're good. I think that falls a lot on, number one, the medical staff, and two, the coaches. Like, it's hard because I can't put any blame at all on the player. Like, they basically like, yeah, you're fine. You're fine, right? And he's, what are you going to say? No, I'm not. Like, you can't be that guy. You know, they'll always try to pin that against you. Like, oh, well, you know, at the time. And even the media. I mean, the media times, like, remember when Cam Newton lost that fumble in the Super Bowl and they were instantly like, he made a business decision there because he saw DeMarcus Ware was about to fall on it, and he was like, nah, I'm about to get out of there. Like, they'll pin stuff like that on you. Oh, you know, he said he had a concussion. Maybe he didn't. Maybe he did. And then they just throw that little twist of words out there, and you're in the back of your mind, you're like, well, what do you mean he might not have? He better have had a concussion to leave the game. You know what I'm saying? Like, they just kind of throw that. So yeah. I think after that, and after having thought about it, number one, I feel bad for Tua because that's a bad situation to be in. But two, everybody down there's got to get fired for sure.
Yeah, that is like, I don't. I guess all of it seems inexcusable.
Oh, yeah.
The in-game thing, I guess I could see like.
No.
Even then it's, but like, what? Okay, he comes back in the game inexplicably. But then he's just listed with a back injury only. And it's a Thursday game too. So there's no turnaround. Yeah,
that's the worst. No, dude, that's bad. And you lied about it. You said it was his back. I can't say, you can't, at some point, the PA, and you see him now they're pissed. Now they're like, dude, you messed with the wrong guy. Now we're going to come after you. Everybody's getting fired. When they get fired up, dude, the players come after them hard. Like, they're, and you see all these guys talking about it. And it's sad because a lot of my teammates had to play through a lot of concussions, because back then concussions weren't like they are now. You know, it was just like, oh, you know, your bell got rung. Be a warrior.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, dude, you see what's happening to these guys, and to put that kid back in that game on a Thursday night, and the way he got slammed, I even started to think, like, dude, I don't even know if I would have slammed him like that. Like, if I was that D tackle, and it's a hard thing to do, to put a guy in a position to be like, you just got right through that offensive line, and you're about to do the greatest thing you've ever done in your life, your first sack in the NFL. Don't hit him hard. But now you see why they're telling them to stop hitting these quarterbacks so hard. They're fragile. They're not crazy tough dudes. They don't want to get hit. And when you body slam a guy backwards, I've told my wife, I'm surprised there wasn't a bigger fight on the field. There probably would have been some serious helmets thrown. Like, dude, at this point, we all got to go out in the blades of glory. Sorry, boys.
Did you notice too, Amazon did the Thursday night broadcast, and they,
which is terrible.
You don't like the Amazon
broadcast? No, I don't want to stream it. I'd rather just watch it on my TV.
What are you, 90 years old? What do you mean you don't want to stream it?
Dude, I don't.
Can you just have like a black and white box TV in your living room, or what?
Can I just hit Fox?
Go. Oh, wow.
It's always so hard.
You're like my dad. Where? How do I turn this thing on?
I'm sorry. I want life to be simple. I don't want to have to order all my stuff and then watch the game at the same time. We noticed this was in your cart. Would you still like to buy the? No, go away. What happened? God, I missed the third down.
I love it. I love it. You just Amazon's genius. They're gonna be now. They're gonna be offering you things that you never would have thought of buying for 3 hours while watching football. But they kept zooming in on his. I forget the what it's called, but when you get the back of the head concussion and your fingers lock up.
Yeah.
And they probably and they got Al Michaels just well. Let's zoom in a little closer there in slow motion.
I can't believe they kept doing that. I was like, and then enough.
I don't know if the NFL sent a memo or what, but poor Lewis Seen. So Lewis Seen had a compound fracture of his lower leg.
That's bad.
It's like in half compound fracture. And I guess they showed the replay in the press box in London. So if you were in the press box covering the game, they did show the replay. They didn't show the replay on NFL Network.
No.
So they just they showed the crowd and they said, yeah, they're going to stretch him out the field here. Let's just go to a promo. So they didn't show one replay of it.
Yeah, you're not supposed to. Nobody wants to see anybody get hurt. That's why I can't believe they kept showing his hands. I was like, dude, enough. Stop showing people that. Nobody wants to see that kind of stuff. Like, we get it. It's a big fight, bunch of barbarians. But there is a line now that people cross, and you're like, wow, that was pretty excessive. Yeah. That guy got slammed hard.
I'm not firing because I think I spent a couple weeks firing. I fired Nathaniel Hackett twice in a row. And I forget who I fired the other time. But we're going to move over to the NFC West here for a firing that might catch you off guard here. All right. This is a general manager that has actually created a Super Bowl team and an NFC Championship game team. But John Lynch, come on down, guy. You gave up what to move up to draft Trey Lance? In an effort to replace Jimmy Garoppolo, who's been nothing but great for your franchise. Jimmy Garoppolo, a respected leader in that locker room. All he does is win football games. Jimmy G's teams are 34-15 when he starts. 34-15. He's played in a Super Bowl. He's played in an NFC Championship game, additionally. And now I think with that defense, too, Jimmy G's not going to ever be like, you know, the star of the he's not going to be the reason why you know the Tom Brady or the Patrick Mahomes, but if you give him a good car to drive, he's going to drive it pretty far, like deep in the playoffs. And the Niners, I think, might be one of the two or three favorites to come out of the NFC now that they've gone back to old reliable Jimmy G. But now they've got a lot less draft capital because John Lynch wanted to move off Jimmy G so badly. Come on down, John Lynch. It's been a good run. You're fired.
Wow, I can't believe you fired
him. Box. Update your LinkedIn profile. Sorry,
wow.
guy.
Wow.
Yep.
I don't even know what to say to that, buddy.
There you have it.
I'm not going to fire John.
He came along after you were gone in San Francisco? Or did you guys cross paths? Okay.
We crossed paths a few times when he was in the media. Such a great guy. And I got to see him this year when he was here. We talked a little bit. But I love John. I think he's great. I will say this. I've been saying for years Jimmy G is the best quarterback in this offense because it is super simple and it is what Jimmy G does best. I do these great handoffs 75% of the times and then I roll out to the right and I draw nobody. But the other 25% of the time, I just throw it to George or Debo and that's about it, right? Like that's all I need.
Now, that Debo touchdown, my God.
Debo. Dude, I'm telling you, people don't understand. If you get a guy that can stand back there and just deliver these rockets out to these – hit your first read, buddy. Hit your first or second read, and we're good. And then every other time, we're just going to hand it off. Like, that's just so easy for him. But I see what they were saying with the Trey Lance. Like, I get that. I don't get drafting, like, trading all that capital for him. But I see how they were like, look how raw he is. Look how amazing he could be because this offense – and it was so linked – in my mind next to Greg Roman's because it was so run first oriented. You know what I'm saying? Like other than that, I would say right now, probably what, like the Broncos are the only other one that really, or maybe the Browns right now that do this run first and you know, all this kind of stuff. But when you talk about a quarterback in that offense, it's so easy to be that guy, but they go, hey, listen, what if you could be that guy, but still be a little bit more of a threat, right? And you're raw. So you can throw the ball like Josh Allen and we're going to have to coach you into being more like Josh Allen. But imagine if we could have both worlds where we could have this guy who could keep defenses at bay because he can run around and at the same time we can have receivers that can just cross these routes or run these, you know, diabolical Dino routes or all this fun stuff. And at the same time we're shifting and motioning and a lot of what we do, and this is how I always kind of saw the offense, was smoke and mirrors, and a lot of it is kind of guessing. this formation looks familiar. I think it might be this play. But then again, it's that play, but it's the pass out of that play. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just so many levels of like, oh my God, I don't even know what to do anymore.
Yeah, I'm all for going and finding the young quarterback with upside that's under team control for 5 years, you know, lower contract. Trey Lance always felt like a weird move for the Niners because he only played 1 year, kind of low level Division I college, right?
North Dakota, right?
It was North Dakota State.
North Dakota State.
It wasn't like he had 30 starts under his belt at a Power Five school, and so he was going to be. I mean, everyone's raw coming out of college. He was even a step further down, and they had a Super Bowl window
in a
here.
Nice way. Yeah. In a nice way. Stepped up.
A step. Well, no, he was like more raw. Saying.
That
I guess.
Didn't sound right, but I know exactly what you're saying. He was way rawer than they thought.
Is rawer a word?
Rawer. He was rawer. Is that a real word?
All right, Booney. The dumb football question of the week is going to be in film review form here.
Oh, okay.
So this is going to be largely for the YouTube audience. So Purple Daily YouTube channel. For the full visuals here, we'll try our best to kind of explain what's happening for the Spotify, Apple, ScoreNorth.com audio audience. But this, I guess I would recommend if you're listening in audio form here, why don't you pause it, go over to the YouTube about 45 minutes in this episode so you can see the visuals here as well. So I'm going to try and do this. This is the first time we've ever done this here where we're actually going to roll some film and you're going to break some stuff down here. So this is what you're seeing here. A 3rd-and-1, Vikings in the red zone. It's at the 10-yard line here. And I'm going to roll this here. And my dumb football question for you is something. Kevin O'Connell kind of broached this twice in press conferences, saying on the this is the Johnny Munt drop from Sunday.
Yeah.
Just a perfectly thrown pass by Cousins that went right through Munt's torso.
We talked about this one
earlier.
It's like
a hole in his chest or something. But Kevin O'Connell kind of mentioned in passing a couple of times in press conferences that Adam Thielen was also an option on this play. So my dumb football question here is, why would you not throw it to Adam Thielen wide open in the end zone? Let's roll the play full speed once, and then you can take the reins here and tell me to slow it down, whatever. Let's run it once here. So Vikings line up. Mm-hmm. Dalvin Cook to the right, shotgun formation. Fake handoff to Dalvin. Johnny Munt wide open there for a first down, drops it. But Adam Thielen coming over the top also looks to be wide open for a touchdown on that play. And for Kirk haters like me, it's kind of one of those, well, he decided before the ball was snapped what he was going to do. And instead of maybe giving it an extra half second to process and seeing Adam Thielen wide open. So my dumb question is, why won't you throw to Thielen for a touchdown here?
Dude, it's so funny you bring this up right now because the first thing that hits my brain is I have this coach in San Francisco named Mike Solari. He's considered one of the gurus of O-line in the NFL. And he used to say this thing that he'd say, listen, I'm never going to second guess your decisions. On Monday when we sit in this nice, cozy, comfortable room, I'm never going to sit back here and ask you why you did something. Why? Because that's not me doing it. So it's always hard, and I just want to preface it that because it's hard to know why someone's doing something because when you're in the moment, the pressure you feel is so contagious. Like I'm looking at this instantly, and the first thing that hits my brain is there's 5 D linemen, right? So all of a sudden, in some way, Kirk knows, hey, listen, we're still running the ball, but there's 5 D linemen out here. So there's 5 dudes coming after me. So this ball has to probably get out quick because if somebody misses, we're going to have somebody free. Same time, roll ahead and start rolling. You're in bunch right. I love bunch because it forces the defense to really figure this out. Like if you're going to press us like this, we're just going to have everybody going every which way and they're all going to be falling over each other. It's supposed to keep people out of doing this, which is probably why Thielen comes wide open and so does Munt. And I can't believe he still dropped this ball. It still pisses me off.
In fairness to Munt,
there's no fairness. I don't care.
He's Johnny Munt. He's been in the league for like 6 years. He has like 9 catches in 6 years or something.
Right. You know? I just want to know why they didn't run the ball here, too. Go back.
Okay.
So there's this point in the moment. Number one, Thielen's not looking, right? Can't throw the ball to a guy who's not looking. Two, see how he's looking right there? And you see my DB, and I don't know. That's not Lattimore, and it might be Bradley Roby, but I don't think it is. Whoever that DB is. I know, it's so hard. God, I wish we had better TVs. I'm kidding. No. See, right, he makes Kirk's looking right now, right? I have one or two guys coming. One more step.
Okay.
Right there. See how this guy starts to look like he's getting back? Thielen's still not looking. Now, Munt's looking right at me. I know that he could probably catch this ball. And what am I thinking here? Just get the first down. Right? Like, I don't need to be crazy. I don't need to see what's going on. And he's probably looking in the periphery and seeing that Cam Jordan's coming around the corner. And he's like, listen, this guy's coming around the corner. Thielen's not looking at me. Munt's looking right at me. And he's got a little bit of space. I'm going to make this quick, easy, simple decision to throw it to him. He's going to fall forward for a first down.
Change. Which, by the way, should have happened if he catches it, right?
Now, would it be great to be like, hey, listen, Thielen comes wide open right about here. You still can't throw it to him. He's not looking at you. Keep going. Comes open right about there.
So he's turning here.
Right there.
He's turned right there. Now at like the 3-yard line, right?
And you got to remember, too, as you're looking at this, there's still a safety over the top, right? And you can throw him a line. You could have easily, but you're never going to know what that outside cornerback is going to do, too.
So the outside cornerback here, to continue my dumb questioning, the outside cornerback has an option here, and you can see here on the screen, once Kirk releases it, he's kind of drifting back toward where Thielen's going here a little bit.
He doesn't know Thielen's there, though.
Okay.
But there's no way that Kirk, you tell me you have to process that as fast as he just took this snap. You can't make that decision. Like, see how, and not even here because the ball's already gone, but go back. Because you got to remember, in his mind, he makes up the decision to throw the ball well before he throws it. Like, see how he's already getting ready to throw it? He's already made up his mind. The ball's coming out. I can't stop myself at this point. So go back even more a little bit. Right about here. I see Thielen come down, and I see this guy squatting. I don't know what he's doing. Maybe he sees Thielen. Maybe he doesn't.
The outside cornerback you're talking about, right?
The outside cornerback. And then, like, right about here, he's probably like, listen, I got to throw it to him. Mm-hmm. I got to throw it to him right now.
Yeah. And
it should have been simple.
You know, Kurt Warner did another great breakdown at NFL Network before this game, and he did one on YouTube highlighting, hey, Kirk is a good quarterback, but here's what prevents him from being a great quarterback. Here's all these throws where, yeah, he's completing a pass, but look at this other thing he could have had for 15 or 20 yards or a touchdown. And I think I put this with my amateur eyes initially in the, oh, man, like, boy, could you pump fake to that tight end and, boom, hold the outside cornerback, and now all of a sudden Thielen is streaking open for a touchdown? Or is that too risky for this situation because 1 yard gets you a third down and now you have a fresh set of downs inside the 10? But then I also think, if I have a chance to throw to Adam Thielen or Johnny Munt, I'm throwing to Adam Thielen. So
yeah, that's how my brain works. No, for sure. But like you just saw it. I mean, number one, Thielen was not looking when he could have thrown the ball. And two, you have a safety back there. Is he a factor? No. Is the outside cornerback a factor? Not really. But at the same time, Kirk sees the tight end running this flat route, and he goes, listen, this is a simple pitch, catch, first down. We move the chains. We keep draining this clock in a really, really tight game. It all made sense to me. None of that falls on Kirk.
Yeah.
You're not saying it does.
I'm asking questions here, all right? I'm putting my big J journalism hat on here.
I'm sorry.
I'm asking the tough questions on behalf of the Kirk haters out there, okay? By the way, I have been very supportive of Kirk Cousins this year. Okay,
I agree 100%.
He is Mr. Fourth Quarter Comeback this season.
Mm.
Two fourth quarter comebacks. He's on pace for like, what, 8 fourth quarter comebacks? That would be close to a record, Alex. I'm not sure.
That would have to be a record, yeah. Track. In one season.
I want to show you one more play here for the YouTube audience. This is, and we can mix in some plays from I think it would just be good to get your insight into how this offense works. Just, you know, we see things as fans and media, but you actually know what you're looking at when it comes to film.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the Justin Jefferson jet sweep. It's a passing touchdown here, but if I'm not mistaken, they ran similar action and handed the ball off to him for a touchdown in that Saints game. Coming from left to right.
Yeah.
This is jet sweep action, and it's a it winds up being a touchdown pass to Justin Jefferson week one against the Packers.
Yeah.
And so I'll just click play here.
Cover one.
And so Jefferson across the line from the left to the right. Boom, he's just wide open. Front pylon on the right side.
Go back one more time.
Do you want the all 22 from this angle or the other angle?
The other angle, just real quick, because I want to see something. It's like the most natural pick ever. I love it. They're fighting. Is that me or you, dude? I don't know.
And here's the different angle from this all 22. So you tell when we go slow mo here, do you want the first angle or the second angle here?
Go the first angle. Yeah.
Okay. All right. We'll run it slowly here for you. Tell us what you see. JJ in motion.
You got a bear front. Looks like five guys coming. It's weird because it's like cover one, but it's not. Cover three.
Who's supposed to? Why were the Packers? You would have so to confused? Think it's
21. 21. Because look, 31's inside. He's got the inside player. 21's got the outside for sure. I mean, 21 doesn't even see him in motion. That's bad. I mean, the more you watch this play, the more this defense just looks worse, right? Go back one more time. And this is one of those things that we've talked about before on this show is go back a little bit more. So you start in the beginning and you look up and you're in a 2x2, simple formation, right? And all of a sudden, Justin Jefferson goes in motion. This guy in the middle, Campbell, he doesn't even notice what's going on. But everybody else is like, see how they're kind of in their own little world? Like, this is one of the things that when you start sending guys across, people should be paying more attention. This guy does a terrible job of letting them know, hey, he's coming over. Because these guys don't even look like they know what's going on. 21 doesn't even see him coming. I mean, it's just – it's bad ball. It's sloppy. I hate when this happens because it's just some of these things are like, dude, when your defense is getting beat this bad that they're picking themselves –
they're running into each other, stumbling all over the place.
Guys, I don't even know what to tell you. I love plays like this too because it's so innovative. It's so simple. And this is why you do it. It's because they're going to fall asleep. You know, this should be a huge red flag. Why is this dude going in motion? Why is he getting over here, if anything, to cause this 3x1 formation? You know what I'm saying? Like, where's everybody going? And then it's even. Does it end up being a 3x1 or a 2? Yeah, because Irv's over there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's 3x1 formation, and you have three guys not knowing what's going on. I mean, this the, is, but it's
the
also.
The illusion of complexity, as Kevin right? O'Connell.
Like, it's so simple, but at the same time, it's not simple. It's simple in the fact that, like, the defense fell asleep, and that's how easy it can look if they do fall asleep on something like that. But at the same time, defensively, when you're looking at this now, this motion could turn into a million different plays. Like, you just saw it on the TV and it was a flat route. And then last week we saw it and it was the same motion and it ended up being a jet sweep to the left. Like, there's so many additives to something so simple as a fly motion. And all of a sudden now the defense is like, man, now we really got to be preparing for everything. And I think, and if I can't say that I'm for certain about this, but did I see Thielen line up in the fullback position? I could have swore I saw
him. Just in the game against the Saints?
Yes.
Man.
I could have swore I saw him in motion from the fullback to a bunch. And I was like, my gosh, how diabolical would it be if you put two receivers back there, motioned them both out? But you motion them in different ways, right? Dude, the more that he
– And a kicker. What do you put a kicker back there too, dude?
Dude, no. Okay. It's funny because – I could have swore I saw Thielen go from the fullback to the bunch, and instantly it hit my brain like, my gosh, what if you were to put him and JJ or even KJ Osborne back there and you just split them all out? And then at the last second, you force the defense, hey, you're going to have to figure this out at the last second. Like, you literally move and everybody just shifts out. It's like, go, boom, balls out. Like, you force the defense right now to make a decision. How are you going
to
play this?
Talk dirty
Ryan,
to me.
You should see where my mind went when I saw this. And I was like, right? And then I started thinking about, and this is another thing that I saw, and I had to tell you this. When I was young in my career, G-Ro and I were friends. G-Ro was a great guy. He's from Cleveland, cool dude, went to school in Cleveland. He's not from Cleveland. He's from Jersey. Jersey, baby. And we were talking one day, and I was always like, dude, what's the next phase? Like, where does it go from here? he was always like, oh, you know, come on, I can't tell you. Well, one day he told me, and he actually kind of told the whole team, and they must have not have remembered or anything, but he was explaining it to me one day, but I saw, and I could have swore, I saw Kevin O'Connell tried to run it once, but he didn't come back to it. And it was this random play in the game, and nobody probably even noticed it. And I saw it now, and he should have made a decision with it, but they didn't do the right thing. And I saw it, and I was like, oh my God, is he about to move on to the next phase of where all this goes to? Like, all these offenses eventually collide into this one big thing where you really spread people out and you really go, now I'm going to make you make this decision. Like, I remember when G-Row was explaining it, I was like, this is either the dumbest thing I've ever heard or the craziest thing I've ever heard.
And he's like, okay, hear me out on this. Nine guards on the field at the same time. Okay.
No, hear me out. It's like you're in the most simple thing, but you spread out the entire field and you're like, wow, this is really going to put everybody in a bind. And I hope that Kevin comes back to it. Maybe I was wrong. It looked just like a formation that I saw once and I was like, I'll never see that again. And I saw it and I went nuts. Like, oh my God, there it is. I mean, they didn't come back to it. I got nervous.
There's so much more. You can tell there's so much more to this thing with the Vikings.
So much more meat on the bone.
3-1. Like, this is, man,
I don't know why everyone's freaking out, right? Like, Dalvin hasn't even had a big game yet. He hasn't even gone off yet. Kirk hasn't even settled his feet yet. The offensive line's still trying to figure out what they're doing. Clearly, they're letting guys run through the A-gaps. But when they do, because they will, and Kirk settles his feet, and Dalvin gets what he's got rolling through, and dude, I'm telling you, I'm excited. It's got to get there, though. It's got to get there, though. If it doesn't get there, I'll be really disappointed.
Well, I think the schedule on paper is going to allow them to get there at least a couple times here. Now, this week is weird, and we'll do a full deep dive next week. But, like, just beat the Bears in any fashion on this weird travel week back from London.
I hope they smoke them. I'm so sick of the Bears. So sick. You can't tell me you're not sick of them.
But how much does that travel week? There's no bye week. You're just coming back from London and
gut it out, boys. Be tough.
I agree. Go win anyway. I just forgot. I forgot what I said an hour ago. Go win anyway. I'm with you. Go beat the brakes off the Bears. A Teddy Bridgewater led Miami team, because I'm guessing Tua is not going to be back by then. And then you get a bye week home against Arizona. That Buffalo game on November 13th is one to circle, but that's still 5 weeks away, though.
You can't overlook the Bears. Because you know what happened to the Bears. That's like a cursed game. I'm telling you, dude. I've seen some weird Bears games go down.
It is, yeah. Like, I think most people still feel like they're one of the worst teams in the league, but don't they have two wins still? That's classic Bears. They got to be one of the five worst teams. Oh, they have eight wins somehow. That's weird.
No, dude, they put up like 5 yards of offense. What are you talking about? They are one of the worst teams.
I think the film reviews, and maybe the audience can tell us in the YouTube comment section. I think we'll hone them, but this is our first little foray into some film stuff here. So,
Now that I know that we can do it, I'm just going to start marking down plays that we need to talk about. Like, dude, look, this was the play I was telling you about.
Well, make it easy for me to find them at least. Or if you can, like, I don't know, we have to come up with a system or something. Old Macadac gets a glass of red wine and starts going through the NFL all 22. It's kind of a tedious process.
But, do the players become blurred?
I think I saw Jefferson. I'm not sure.
Dude, that'd be hilarious. That's the one show we got to do.
That's the next level here. It's just get some film review on adult beverages and whatever else. Anyhow, hey, all right.
Brewing Company would love it.
Yes, they would. All right, that's a wrap on Trenches with Boone here this week. Appreciate you guys hanging out with us, all the positive comments and whatnot. We'll see you guys next week back